This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana, signature support from the office of the East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor President. And our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. We begin today with Madison Sheehan. She is the Secretary of the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, appointed by Governor Jeff Landry. And she most recently worked for South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem in various leadership positions. She is a graduate of The Ohio State University, like our good friend Mary Patricia Ray, who's an occasional guest on this show, one of the biggest universities in all the world. And I'm sure, let's start there. I'm sure you're quite proud of that.
I am. It was great to grow up in Ohio. I grew up on a small family farm in Northwest Ohio. It was a dream to be able to go to Ohio State. Had the opportunity to serve as an Ohio FFA state officer during my first year at Ohio State, and then was able to walk on to the women's rowing team and had a lot of success there, and learned a lot about leadership and being a part of a team while I was at Ohio State, and really had a great opportunity there to be a part of The Ohio State University.
And you led your team to multiple Big Ten championships.
Yes, we did. We won a few while I was there, and we had a really great team, a lot of athletes who went on to become Olympians and leaders in their own fields. And so it was a great opportunity to work with so many strong women.
Well, you grew up on Lake Erie, worked on a family farm in Northwest Ohio, and you went to school in Ohio State and then worked in South Dakota. I would imagine the weather here has been a little bit of a adjustment, hasn't it?
It has. It absolutely has. You know, when you grow up on Lake Erie, you think what humidity is, and then you move to Louisiana and it's very different. And so growing up, we had the opportunity to spend a lot of time on the lake, a lot of time with my family. It was very important for us to be able to learn those qualities of growing up on a farm, and took those with me to South Dakota. It's a very similar environment, and it's a little different down here in Louisiana, but it's great people, great food, and really very fortunate to be able to be here.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number, as always. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org, and Secretary Madison Sheehan is with us. She runs the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, and we have a state rich in natural resources, and you're right at the forefront. What's your perception based on your time in Louisiana to this point?
Well, this is a sportsman's paradise. We've had a lot of success so far in taking over the department. When I talked to Governor Landry about taking the position, he wanted to make sure we truly highlighted the sportsman's paradise and set an example to the nation of what the sportsman's paradise was, and tell people the story here in Louisiana, why it's so great to hunt and fish here. And what we found is that this department manages about 1.7 million acres. And with that, in our wildlife management areas, we have a lot of opportunity to be able to get people out on boats and out fishing and out hunting. And we have a unique opportunity as a department to serve the people in Louisiana, working with parents and grandparents as well as kids and grandkids. And so we're very fortunate to be able to connect with the people of Louisiana, both on a recreational scale and the commercial scale.
How's the session going?
It's going really well. We've had about 12 bills passed through the legislature as of now, working great with all of the legislators at the Capitol. The natural resources team there has been fantastic for us, as well as being able to take the lead from the governor and be able to work directly with him to put our legislative package together. And he's obviously seen a lot of success, and so we've been able to follow that as well.
877-217-5757. I would ask that you make your remarks brief. We're going to try to cover a lot of ground in a short time with Madison Sheehan, the Secretary of the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air. Good morning. Welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Thank you, sir. I know you're new to Louisiana, ma'am, but I'd like to know one question from you that I've got for you. I grew up in the bayous and rivers of Louisiana all my life, and I'm pushing 80. I just sold my boat because I've got fed up with the Amite River and the Tickfaw River and common courtesy that I was raised with on the river to other boaters. They will swamp you in a heartbeat. I've been just about swamped a number of times on the Amite River as well as Tickfaw.
All right. Thank you, HB. Madam Secretary, your response.
Well, you know, last week we had Boating Safety Week here in Louisiana, as well as on the national scale, working with our Coast Guard partners, as well as everybody here in the state, to really promote boating safety, make sure we don't have any drunk drivers out there and have a zero tolerance policy for that. And actually had no boating safety accidents this weekend, as well as we were able to get about 11 DUIs and folks off of the waters. And so completely understand your concerns, and our enforcement agents are out there and doing their very best to make sure they're supporting the people and the locals and making sure you all stay safe on the water this summer.
Madison Sheehan is at your service, and as mentioned, please be concise. Let's go to Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Hi, Patricia. You're on the air with Secretary Sheehan.
Thanks, and good morning. So this is about chronic wasting disease in deer. And I see y'all have a control area in Madison and Tensas parishes.
Tensas Parish.
Tensas, excuse me. And I was wondering if you had a plan to call the deer there to try to control the problem like they did up in Rocky Mountain National Park with elk. Thanks.
So a lot of what we've been doing as far as the CWD issue, obviously it's a national issue and we're seeing it all over the country. And a lot of what we're seeing are these deer up in the Arkansas and northern Texas areas be able to kind of transit over to our areas. And we've been working with the legislature to make sure there is money there to do testing, as well as providing the public the opportunity to bring their deer heads in for us to be able to conduct the testing. And so we're actively doing testing, and we still have those sites available, and we'll have them once we get back into deer season as well, and making sure that's a priority to target this issue that's really affecting a lot more states than just us, as you mentioned. And so we want to make sure we're staying on top of it and making sure people know that they can bring those deer heads to us and we can do the testing and really track where the species is, because as a deer hunter myself, I want to make sure everybody has the opportunity to be able to go and deer hunt just like I did growing up.
There's been some legislation, and a listener notes something that you mentioned on your way in here today about black bear in Louisiana. This is Connor in Prairieville. Connor, thank you for your observation. What's going on that front about the
so black as of bear? Now, the black bear is actually a huge success for us. So it's very rare to be able to get a species off of the endangered list, and then let alone be able to bring that species to the point where it's huntable. And so back in about 1981, we were able to get the alligator off the endangered list and bring that into a hunting season, be able to manage by the department. And so we're able to do a very similar thing with the black bear species. So we've been working with a lot of partners, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Safari Club International, and a lot of other outside partners to be able to bring this back into a hunting season. And we were actually able to pass a bill this session with Neil Reiser to be able to put the hunting season in place, as well as with our commission at the department, to allow for 10 black bear tags to go out. And then from there, we'll be able to expand the program and make sure that we have success with it with our first year, and then be able to manage the species throughout that process as well.
All right. 877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org in our remaining time with Secretary Sheehan, Madison Sheehan from Ohio by way of South Dakota, two states known for their natural resources. And Roger Peake asked, can Secretary Sheehan comment on the posting of tidal wetlands resulting from what he terms illegal ownership claims by private interests? What's going on this front?
So as far as a lot of our wetlands go and a lot of our lands in Louisiana, like I said, we have about 1.7 million acres that we manage as a department, and we're able to use that for our conservation and our natural resource efforts. And so what we want to do anytime we're working with the public and working with different outside organizations, creating those private-public partnerships, is we want to work with our landowners and make sure that what we're doing is in the best favor of the sportsman's paradise and conservation and habitat management.
877-217-5757, some topics that are still emanating now that involve Secretary Sheehan and involve duck stamps. They'll be available June 1st. What's going on there?
We're really excited about our duck stamp program. This is the first time the duck stamps are available on an online platform. Previously, you had to come into our office to be able to purchase those duck stamps. the first set of duck stamps for our collectors. You can still come into our office and get the low numbers and pick your numbers when you're at our Baton Rouge building. But other than that, if you're just looking to get your duck stamp for $10, you can come in and get those online when you get your tags and have them on LA Wallet and be able to use a lot of our digital platforms as we work to make our department even more modern and professional. We talk a lot about at the executive level, making sure we get online platform set up for our users so that way you don't have to necessarily come into our offices. And this is one great example of us being able to do that.
And Alligator Lottery applications are open until June 23rd. Tell us more.
Yeah, so our lottery applications are open on all of our wildlife management areas. So we release those tags, and we do it with a lottery system. So if you're interested in being able to hunt an alligator on one of our properties, make sure you get into the lottery and have that opportunity.
877-217-5757. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, and we will return with more from Secretary of the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, Madison Sheehan, and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org if you're so inclined in our remaining time with Secretary Sheehan. We're back in 89.3 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Madison Sheehan, Secretary of the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. Very proud of her degree from The Ohio State University. And it's always nice to get a degree, but especially from a school like this, which, of course, has a storied history in college football. Woody Hayes, I think, won 5 national titles there. He was probably dead and gone before you were born, but I'm sure they still talk about Woody. I've been to Columbus. Columbus actually reminds me a little bit of Baton Rouge, maybe more than a little. State capital, major university, state university. I'm sure there's some similarities you've noted. It's a bigger city.
It is. It's a bigger city, but very similar atmosphere and people and a lot of great food and a lot of great things going on to be able to get involved in the community. And so it's been great being able to be here in Baton Rouge. I'm becoming an LSU fan very quickly, especially as a former college athlete. I'm a big women's sports fan, and being able to go out and watch the Tigers play has been great.
Well, you grew up on a family farm in Northwest Ohio, so I bet it was quite an adjustment going to a school that has well over 50,000 students, doesn't it?
Yes, sir, it does.
Like 60 or something. Right?
About 60,000 people were there when I was attending Ohio State. And so when you grow up in a small town that probably has more cows than people, then it's a big adjustment to be able to move to the city. But it was a great opportunity and great experience. And then being able to move to South Dakota, you kind of go back to the small town atmosphere and now have the opportunity to be here in Baton Rouge.
All right. I remember the story, as I'm sure many of our listeners do, about Coach Orgeron, Coach O at LSU. He was from La Rose and he came to LSU and it was like, this place is just too big for me. And he left. He didn't even stay until the first day of class, and of course he came back and won a national title, so he did okay. And he left with $17 million in parting gifts from LSU, too. But Ohio State's got a very good coach, and I suspect they'll be competing for national honors, as will Louisiana State University. David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Secretary Sheehan.
Good morning, Madam Secretary. Louisiana produces 25% of the nation's seafood. The breeding grounds for the seafood are the wetlands, which are rapidly deteriorating. That's observable and provable. Now, sea level rise on the Louisiana coast has risen 6 inches since 2010. Governor Landry is an advocate of more oil and gas production. Now, Madam Secretary, is CO2 a greenhouse gas? And just if we continue producing CO2 in the atmosphere as we are now, in decades to come, there won't be any wetlands.
All right. Would you respond to David in Atlanta?
So our job as a department is to make sure that we're serving the sportsman's paradise and that we're focusing on conservation. And we're working with our partners at CPRA to make sure that they have the resources and tools that they need, as well as being able to work with our commercial partners in the oyster industry and the shrimping industry and the fishing industry to make sure that they have the tools and resources they need. And as we notice this coastal decline, we want to make sure we're doing our part to be able to support the environment and to be able to support our sportsmen to be able to do what they need to do as well.
Any parting revelations?
Well, I'm very excited to be here. It's truly an honor to be able to serve the state of Louisiana and be able to serve the sportsman's paradise, and very glad to be here and look forward to having being able to come on again and join you.
Well, when's the first time you met Governor Landry?
I met Governor Landry about 4 years ago. I was on a trip with Governor Noem. I worked for her for about 3 or 4 years as well, and had the opportunity to meet the governor, then attorney general, and really hit it off. And
he remembered.
And he remembered. Yes, sir, he remembered. And him and Governor Noem are obviously close friends, and so have the opportunity to work with them and be able to be here now.
Okay, well, good luck to you, and hopefully you'll be back soon. Thank you, and congrats on rising to high places in our state. And you're
Thank you. The
youngest cabinet secretary, too, so keep going.
Thank you.
Madison Sheehan, Secretary of the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. And in just a bit, we'll be hearing from Mark Ballard. His weekly visit is coming. He's in the Beltway, and of course the nation, if not the entire world, is riveted on what will happen in the Manhattan courthouse as former President Trump awaits a verdict on hush money payments that were allegedly made improperly and some say fraudulently, and a trial that had lots of sordid revelations with one of the star witnesses from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the former Stephanie Gregory Clifford, who became Stormy Daniels, an exotic dancer many years ago at the Gold Club in Baton Rouge, and ultimately one of the top adult film stars in the world. The other day, one of the top basketball players in the history of the sport died, Bill Walton, William Theodore Walton III, pride of San Diego, California. He was 71 years old. He won 2 national titles at UCLA and 2 NBA titles with Portland and with Boston in the NBA, but his career in the professional ranks was affected dramatically by injury. He played fewer than 500 games because of injuries that were profound, but he kept on going, and he also conquered the stuttering issue that he was afflicted with until the age of 28, became a sportscaster, and reigned as one of the 50 top sportscasters of all time, according to one survey. So he is a man of great intelligence and eloquence, but he had a stuttering issue, and he is an example of how he overcame a problem that many live their whole lives with. The president of the United States now, Joe Biden, had a stuttering issue, and at times you can tell that he still battles that, but Bill Walton did it well. He was a guy who was a free spirit. At the time, he was not particularly fond of his coach, John Wooden, but as years go by, players often become more fond of their coaches, just like they do with their fathers. They're at a rebellious age, and when Walton was playing at UCLA, the Vietnam War was still going, and it was a country in tumult in 1971 when he enrolled at the campus in Westwood. And when John Wooden retired in 1975, 1 year after Walton left, he left with a national title. UCLA's 8-year run had been interrupted in 74 in Walton's senior year when North Carolina State beat them in double overtime in Greensboro in the semifinals of the Final Four, but he left with an 86-4 record as a college player and is justifiably remembered as one of the best players in the history of the collegiate game. Dale Brown got to know Bill Walton because he had Adam Walton, his son, as one of his players. And the other night, I didn't even know Bill Walton had died. I got a message from Coach Brown saying that he had learned of Bill Walton's passing from Adam. And like the 160 players who have played for Coach Brown, he views every one of them as a son. And he sent me the message that he sent to Adam that night, and I think he would be pleased that I share it. And this says an immense thing about Coach Brown, but also about Bill Walton, who supported Coach Brown even when he disciplined his son many times. He says, "The summation of anyone's life is a most difficult task, but not so with your father. Watching him live his daily life reminded us on this troubled earth that there are some good people that understand that being important is nice, but being nice is far more important. Our feelings today are manifested in a united love and devotion to a man who is a paragon of love and compassion and brought the best out of everyone. Life is full of memory, some good, some bad. Let us remember what made us happy and learn from the ones that made us sad. Today the grief is intense because the joy of knowing Bill Walton was immense. We can shed our tears that he is gone, or we can smile because he lived. Our hearts can be empty because we can't see him, or we can be full of the love and the good times we shared with him. I sincerely believe his words to us today would be that I want no rights in a gloom-filled room, but please do remember the fun and the love we shared. This is a journey we all must take. It's part of the Lord's plan on the road to our real home. Miss me, but let me go, because I am in my Lord's loving care, and love you all eternally. That from Coach Dale Deward Brown, who will soon be celebrating his 89th birthday on Halloween. And as you can tell, his mind is fertile, as it always was, and he put a man's life into perspective in a way that only he could. We'll be back with Mark Ballard on Talk Louisiana. We'll talk about what's happening in New York, Baton Rouge, Washington, and beyond. And if you'd like to comment, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. And it's always a honor and pleasure to catch up with Mark Ballard, the man in the Beltway now, who for many years was in Baton Rouge. And we'll talk about what's happening in Washington and in Louisiana's capital, nation's capital, and then the Bayou State capital. But the focus of the world is on New York City. Gus Weil called it the center of the universe, and a Manhattan courtroom is now the epicenter, where Donald Trump faces the prospect of either being acquitted, convicted, or there being a hung jury in his trial, 34 counts against the former United States president. Yesterday, the jury deliberated 4.5 hours, and they have just begun day two. We'll see what happens. But on this show 2 days ago, we visited with Speaker Mike Johnson, who was serving as a surrogate for the former president, his good friend, outside the Manhattan courthouse a few days ago. And here was Mike Johnson's take on whether Donald Trump was getting a fair shake.
Well, the trial in Manhattan is just like the other that they're pursuing against him around the country. They have completely weaponized the system of justice. And the reason I gave those comments and I felt like it was important for me to go there is not as Speaker of the House so much as an individual citizen, an attorney, a former litigator myself, as an officer of the court. I'm just absolutely disgusted by what they've done to our system, because when the people begin to lose faith in the fairness of our justice system, you lose a critical component of what is necessary to keep a constitutional republic like we have, this grand experiment in self-governance. And so that's what's at stake here. And it's lawfare. I mean, it truly is. You have the prosecutors who are pursuing a political vendetta against the nominee for one of the major parties in the country for president.
All right. That's Mike Johnson. Mark, do you think that Speaker Johnson really believes that, or is he just posturing? What's your
feel? Well, I mean, and he says he believes it. And so, I mean, I've got to respect the man at his word as far as that goes. I don't know, from what I followed in the trial, is that it seems not to be as weaponized and actually kind of sort of based on facts. Now the jury's question is, are those facts compelling enough to convict not just a former president, but any person of those? And that's what they're deciding right now. And I think that's the issue, is are the facts compelling enough to find beyond a reasonable doubt that he committed a crime?
877-217-5757 is your number. And one of the star witnesses, I don't know if that term is applicable, but if there was a witness who got the most attention in the trial, even more than Michael Cohen, it was Baton Rouge's Stormy Daniels, and she gave a rather livid, descriptive account of her episode with Donald Trump. There actually were two, but the one that she says resulted in sexual activity happened in Nevada and at a golf tournament. And in the former president, then a private citizen, 60 years old, meets 27-year-old Stormy Daniels. And next thing you know, according to her, she's in his hotel room and she goes in the bathroom and finds that he likes Old Spice and Pert Plus. And Donald Trump said he was going to take the stand. He said he was, and at one point said he was being prevented from taking the stand, and then the judge quickly informed him that he had every right to take the stand. Well, he did not take the stand. Stormy did, and she said, I didn't make this up, because if I had, it would have been a lot more interesting. But here is Mike Johnson commenting on whether he believes Stephanie Gregory Clifford Stormy Daniels. Do you think Stormy Daniels is telling the truth about her relationship, if you want to call it that, with the former president?
I don't. I don't know that any witness that's been put on the stand in this case has any credibility.
All right. So I didn't expect him to say that, but it's hard to believe that Stormy Daniels is not telling a version of the truth that she believes is accurate, and it appears that she knows a lot about the former president, Mark.
Yeah, and that is a salacious information, but really whether they had an affair or not is not really the core element. The core element is, did Donald Trump instruct his go-to guy, Michael Cohen, to find money from his campaign funds to pay off Stormy Daniels not to spread that story? And I mean, I think that's where we have to zero in on the evidence. Though, I mean, surely her testimony was interesting to follow.
Yeah, and his attorneys, both in opening and closing remarks, said that Donald Trump did not have an affair, a tryst, a relationship with Stormy Daniels. So they opened the door to this. And the reason is because even if the former president is acquitted, there is the court of public opinion. And you and I are of an age, we remember when Gary Hart in 1987, a year before the 88 presidential election, of which he was the favorite at that time, he was run out of the race because he had an alleged relationship, which he later pretty much acknowledged, with Donna Rice, who was a Phi Beta Kappa from the University of South Carolina, an impressive lady in many ways. And he had an extramarital affair, and he even had to have a press conference in which Paul Taylor of the Washington Post asked him the question that today would seem ridiculous, but at the time was considered to be progressive. He said, have you ever been unfaithful to your wife? Now, Donald Trump, it would probably be which wife? But Mark, I'm not sure the American people, as Dick Morris said about Bill Clinton, give a damn about any of this as far as the sexual activities. Donald Trump is loved by the evangelicals, who believe that fornication will send you to hell, but they're standing by their man.
And I think that's the point, though, is that the thing that the nation has changed, and what Gary Hart did on the monkey business in the Bahamas, I mean, it's back then was enough to deep six his presidential ambitions, and now not so much, you know. So and maybe it's part of the I mean, we need to remember that Donald Trump is a seasoned reality TV star, and he knows how to build up the excitement and the controversy and keep the attention on himself, and that seems to be what he's done, and it's very successful, and it may have changed how America in general over what is, I guess, 30 years now feels about infidelity in marital infidelity.
877-217-5757. We have some folks lined up, so we do ask you to be brief with Mark. But John in Mid-City. John, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thank you, Jim. First of all, a beautiful eulogy you and Coach Brown had for Bill Walton. And, of course, Walton is inextricably linked with the Grateful Dead. Maybe you could play some of that on the way out on your show. And Mark, a question for you, sir, is looking into your crystal ball, who do you think is going to win the 2024 election and why? Thank you.
All right.
Well, see, I'm not a gambling man. I've never taken to that. And so doing that crystal ball is kind of that is part of gambling. And I think that there are so many things that are up there that and so many dynamics that could change at any moment that it could be either one of them, depending on on any number of factors.
Well, I would say that that is one of the reasons why the nation is riveted to this trial, because this trial may not mean much to people as far as whether Donald Trump hid hush money or had sex with a porn star. But if he is acquitted, he's already the favorite. Then I'd say he becomes an overwhelming favorite. If he is convicted, then maybe the pendulum swings to the other side. Maybe Joe Biden becomes the favorite. And if there's a hung jury, I think Donald Trump would be able to characterize that, even if it's one lone wolf, Mark, as a victory.
I think he's already trying to set up the fact that he may be convicted as a victory. I mean, he's said yesterday as he left the court that Mother Teresa couldn't get out, you know, who would fall to these charges, you know. And so I was like, well, and I think we're going to see that, you know, we're going to see that playing on. So.
James in Metairie. James, you're on with Mark Ballard.
Hi, Jim, and hello, Mark. It's my understanding that Stormy Daniels, that event happened while he was married, I think with Karen McDougal. The man is an adulterer, I believe. Mark, I want to get your opinion about something. Hakeem Jeffries is criticizing or attacking little weak Mike Johnson for not installing a plaque which honors police officers, Capitol police officers, who defended the Capitol on January 6th. They're past the deadline to install the plaque. What can you tell us about this? I think he's bowing, Mike Johnson is, to MAGA King Donald Trump.
He very well might be. And, I mean, I would like to know what the problem is, too, but they've not really discussed why they're not going to put that plaque up. So.
Well, Mike Johnson, you know, he was all in favor of an immigration bill until Donald Trump told him he didn't like it, that he, Donald Trump, didn't like it. And then suddenly the bill was killed and it passed the Senate. And it was a Republican bill. And so Donald Trump is the Republican Party, Mark. He is the Republican Party. Mike Johnson is largely irrelevant. It's Donald Trump. Now, Johnson has a great responsibility. And without him, there would not be aid to Ukraine. And on that, he did buck the former president, and I commend him for doing so. But it took him a long time to get there. And some would say it's because of the influence of Donald Trump, who, it's fair to say, is a close associate of Vladimir Putin. Putin says that he was for Trump in both elections. He said that in Helsinki. And I think we're headed for some many issues that will be fleshed out, and we're going to try to flesh out a few after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard is with us, and a listener brought up something that we discussed on this show a few months ago. The New York Times yesterday in its pages notes that Marco Rubio is now emerging as possibly the front runner to be the running mate of former President Trump. Now, the Times puts it this way. It says a risk is that Rubio is from Florida, as is Trump now. Trump is registered and lives in Florida. And the Times puts it this way, saying Rubio would have to move out of state to avoid a hurdle. The Constitution potentially bars two residents from the same state from sharing a presidential ticket. Now, that is not accurate, by the way. You can be from the same state and run for president and vice president, but you give up that state. Which means that Trump, if he carries Florida, which he likely will, he would lose 30 electoral votes, which he's not going to do. So, yes, Rubio, who's a senator from Florida, would have to resign his post and move to Louisiana or somewhere else, as Dick Cheney did when he was running Halliburton and lived in Texas, voted in Texas for 5 years, and then suddenly overnight became a resident of Wyoming, Mark. This is a fascinating development if it happens.
Well, he did grow up in Wyoming and represented Wyoming in the Congress.
He did.
It would be, but I'm it is also kind of dreaming right now, because the talk now is to go with an unconventional thing. Former President Trump is playing this running mate thing for all it's worth, for all of the free advertising he can get out of it. Mm-hmm. And so now the campaign is talking about maybe going with an unconventional.
Well, I saw Tom Cotton was mentioned, the senator from Arkansas, this week, but I don't think Tom Cotton would ever be chosen by Donald Trump for one reason. He's taller than Trump. Now, Jeff Landry, though, Jeff Landry, look out, look out, look out. Randy and Zachary, you're on with Mark Ballard. Good morning, Randy. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts about Governor Landry vetoing the food desert bill that was passed by the legislature, as well as his refusing to accept the food for the summer EBT program, when studies show that healthy diets present healthy citizens? And I'll take my answer off.
All right. Well, I thought they'd worked out the summer issue, but Mark doesn't follow the capitals closely. Yeah, that one's done. But
what I can say is that it is a Republican issue that the SNAP, food stamps program, is out of control and has been growing exponentially since it was expanded during the pandemic, and that they wanted to kind of rein it in. And then what Governor Landry did was well in line with what the national Republicans are pushing. And you're going to see this play out in the farm bill, as the farm bill is going to start coming to the forefront in the next few weeks or so. The SNAP being the key issue in how that farm bill is passed or not.
Holly in the Garden District notes a story that I have found from Tuesday. It was front page in The Advocate from Mark Ballard, our guest. High court ruling puzzles legal scholars. Three liberal justices voted against second majority black district. What happened, Mark?
Well, basically what happened is that the conservative justices, forgive me for doing this kind of grouping them together like that, but the conservative justices have fallen in line with what's called the Purcell Doctrine, and that is basically, if it gets too close to the election, that they'll just suspend it and use the existing map, and a lot of progressives and the liberals on the high court have said that Purcell Doctrine has been used by legislatures and government officials to keep a status quo that is a white dominant districts in the congressional races. And so what they were saying here, and what the three liberal justices were saying, and one of them actually said it out loud, is that that you're applying the Purcell Doctrine in Louisiana when there was plenty of time for the lower courts to figure this out, and that it was, even though that the status quo was two black majority maps, and that I think is what they were trying to point out, that and Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson has done this in a number of her opinions, is pointing out the irony, to be polite, of the originalist theories that are espoused by Justice Alito and Justice Roberts and some of the others, and how they all just flip that originalist theory when it suits their purposes mm-hmm. better. And I think that was what she was doing here, and that is what they are doing here. And then the other thing that we need to keep in mind is that the Supreme Court has not decided yet whether or not they're going to hear the case. All they decided was that under this Purcell Doctrine, that the existing map, the one that was passed by the legislature with two black majority districts, will be used in the November election.
And it was a Republican governor and a Republican legislature that allowed this to happen. And not only allowed it, they did it. They did it. And so it would be really interesting if it were thrown out. But Mike Johnson predicted Tuesday that it will be thrown out, that Cleo Fields, if he wins, will have one term. And wouldn't that be something if Cleo got clipped again? It happened to him once before, but we shall see, and he's got to win the election first. But
that'll be interesting, because if they take the Louisiana case, what they did in South Carolina last Thursday was basically said, oh, no, the legislature can define what's politics and what's racial. And in the South Carolina case, they basically moved 30,000 black voters from Nancy Mace's district and into a black majority district that was already a black majority district. And Nancy Mace went from being a moderate Republican in Charleston to a MAGA Republican almost overnight once that map is passed. And Alito and Robertson said the legislature can decide it. In the Louisiana case, the legislature
did
said
decide. Yeah.
That this is a political thing. So are they going to follow the same thought process? And if so, that means we're going to have the same map. Or are they going to do as Justice Sotomayor and Justice Kagan seem to say, is that they're going to reverse course when it comes to adding another black Democrat into the House of Representatives, which they've also done.
Well, today, front page advocate James Finn, your colleague, writes that Louisiana lawmakers have approved Senate Bill 497 that lets Governor Jeff Landry, and it will let future governors as well, choose most members of the State Ethics Board, which serves as a watchdog on public corruption, and is now currently locked in a dispute with the current governor over alleged violation of ethics laws. Louisiana law currently gives the governor the right to choose 7 of the ethics board's 11 members, and the current law requires him to choose from a group of finalists recommended by university leaders. Senate Bill 497 from Blake Miguez removes the colleges from the process, giving the governor the power to directly pick appointees. So is this, it's being viewed by some as a power grab, is an accurate summation. Barry Irwin, our friend of cable, calls the current setup a Louisiana solution to a Louisiana problem. But anyway, what in the world's going on? It seems that the governor, like many governors before him, and I'm sure some after him, desires to have more power, Mark.
And you're shocked by that, huh? That's pretty much what they're in office for. And it sounds to me like that this is a power grab, and he thinks he can do it and get away with it. And he, you know, and that seems to be more important than whatever thought process is going into whether the higher education boards are choosing nominees or whether the governor is choosing nominees.
I guess the question is, based on some of these decisions from the highest courts, we saw it in Louisiana and we're seeing it in Washington, the court is not necessarily in sync, nor should it always be, with public opinion. There was but if you can win in the courts, Mark, you can go a long way in politics.
Well, yes, but that's always been the case. Well, it's always been the case since Mabry versus Madison back in the 1700s. But that is the case. You have to, if you can get the courts to go along with you, then you can pass a law saying that black people cannot ride in specific cars, and then overturn that law by saying that the school system cannot be separate but equal.
But it is interesting. We have term limits on presidents. We have term limits on governors. But there are no term limits on U.S. Supreme Court justices. And Clarence Thomas has been there 33 years and gives no indication that he's going to leave before he expires. And some would say that no matter who is there, liberal, conservative, or otherwise, they should not be allowed to serve 30, 40, 50 years.
Well, that's a decision that we're going to have to make. I believe that was set up that way so that the justices did not, and judges on federal courts, because it's also true for them as well.
We've got to roll, but thanks, Mark, as always. We'll be calling next week. We should have a lot happening between now and then. Stay safe and stay tuned.